Well, you go back for a minute. He graduated high school. Wasn't that super?
Some were two-year courses, some four.
Right.
Ready? Come the night of the graduation and the commencement speech was at the Carnegie Music Hall. In order that I would not focus my eyes on one part of the hall instead of as a speaker, I sometime have been told should have his eyes wander through the audience, I placed my parents in the first row on the first floor. My brothers were scattered left and right, and my grandmother was in the balcony.
She was up there.
Did your grandmother live with you?
Yeah. She had lived with us for a while after that. Now, after graduation and after the theater stint, I applied for employment at the Sully Auto Stores. The Sully Auto Stores was owned by a man by the name of Towns, two men by the name of Townsend and Gross. And they had a store at Wood Street, and they had another auto supply store at where Lane Bryant's is now on Fifth Avenue. It was a big arcade.
Why, and did you become disenchanted with the theaters?
Well, I guess it was fortunate for me I did become disenchanted, because it was about that time that, I'll come to that. I'll bring that up a little later for you. But working then at the, this is a lot of order, but I'm just remembering now. Working then at the Sully Auto Stores, I guess the salesmanship I picked up from meeting the Wrigley man paid off, because for several weeks I was the top salesman in the store. I had the top volume of sales and received the prize. But during that period, I guess the Lord had sent Becky my way. Her father had a sponge and chamois stand in the store, because they were in the janitor supply business.
That's
selling sponges
started.
And chamois. And Becky sort of had an eye on me, and knew I came from a very poor family. And she thought that I ought to have some consideration. Uh-huh. And also, I should mention that her grandmother, blessed memory, lived across the street from us when all the boys were living there, and made her mind up that I was for her, Becky. So it seemed to work out pretty well, and that's where our courtship started.
Preordained, yeah.
Okay. When I was working at the auto store, and Dad could not see his son-in-law, his future son-in-law, being and working for someone else, that was about time I would start in the business. And he thought he would try and help me find some sort of business. He did take another look at the theaters. And the theaters at that time were being taken over by Warner Brothers, and somehow or other we did not get into it, thank goodness. But instead, we found a little wiping cloth business. It was at 3800 Liberty Avenue, run by a man who needed some extra financial support. And Dad was gracious enough to lend me $3,000 to start the business in 1928.
And what was the name of that company?
The name of the company was Industrial Cloth Company. He left. I took over completely, and from then on, it's been our family business.
And when did you change the name?
Change the name. About a year or two later, we changed it to Iron City Industrial Cleaning Corporation. Mm-hmm. In 1937, remember now, we started business in 28, 29 were very, very depressed years. You talk about
today's economy.
That's
the beginning of depression.
Okay.
Right.
And we stayed in that plant, which I guess was all of 3,000 square feet, if that much. And in 1937, which was another bad year financially, we moved to 4719 Hatfield Street.
You were already married by then.
We married in 29. Let me finish up the sequence of the businesses. Uh-huh. And in 1937, we moved to our present location on Frankstown Avenue, which then was 15,000 square feet. And we were told by people in the industry we'd made a mistake because we'd paid too much for the building, but we recognized there was potential growth in the area. We could use the building. Today, we're very happy to say that 15,000 has grown to 65,000 square feet.
Oh, my God.
Now, you ask a question.
You were already married.
We got married on July the 2nd, 1929, at the old Rittenhouse, which was on Highland Avenue.
Yeah, that was the place.
The Cans was on the first floor, and Rittenhouse was on the top floor. I was married by Rabbi Morris Levine, of blessed memory, who was the rabbi of a Dash Assurance congregation.
Were your parents still living then, Herman?
My mother was living. Both parents were living. Mm-hmm.
And where did you and Beck move then?
Where did We all do back in those early days. We lived on a second floor at Mother's Home at 613 North Euclid Avenue. We occupied a bedroom, a living room, and a kitchen. And I think we ate 8 of our dinners downstairs out of 7 days a week. But to us, it was a very happy home. Now during that period, I became interested in the congregation, possibly prior to our marriage, because I respected Cecil Rudin, my daddy-in-law, for his interest in the congregation. Having a good foundation given to me by my parents, I became active in the congregation.
Which congregation?
The Dr. Sharon Congregation.
Now tell us about your family, your children.
Our children, our first daughter was born in 1931, Florida. You don't need the exact date, do you?
No. And then
our son was born in 1933, Marvin. Mm-hmm. We then bought our first home at 5636 Melvin Street. We must have moved in there about 1935. It was a lovely home owned by Hyman Tush, who was quite a figure in the community, T-U-S-C-H, owned the United Metal Company. Sam Marin was his nephew, and of course, his wonderful business.
Uh-huh.
And in 1937, Marvin passed away. Then Myrna Joy, M-Y-R-N-A-J-O-Y, Rosenthal. Myrna Joy was born in 1938.
Uh-huh.
You want to stop for a moment? Our home life was geared to the Orthodox environment in that we had the utmost respect for Dad Cecil Rudin and Mother Fanny Persky Rudin, to the point that we carried over the same kashrus, knowing that they would visit with us often, and we certainly had to respect them for their beliefs. Our attendance at the congregation was periodically on Sabbath as we were building a business, but we always were very active around the high holidays.
But you still commuted to East Liberty.
Still commuted to East Liberty, yeah, for the high holidays. And in 1938, we then moved back to Jackson Street, 5749 Jackson Street.
You sold your house on Melvin Street.
Sold the house on Melvin Street and moved back to 5749 Jackson Street.
Uh-huh.
Mother and Dad's home was about 2 blocks away from there. And many Friday evenings after being in business, or after we had finished our dinner, either with them or them with us, we would then go to their home. And some people who lived in that area at the time would come over for a glass of tea afterwards. And over a cup of tea then, the people that I remember quite well was Bryna and, forget his first name, Rubenstein, the contractor, Bryna's parents.
Oh.
And also the Lipschitz family, which are the parents of Louis and Herman, and the 2 girls. And Louis Farbro, who was a tailor, lived up in that neighborhood. Many Friday evenings were spent there over a glass of tea, listening to some of the tales versed through how they operate their own businesses.
Uh-huh.
Getting back then to community activity, I mentioned earlier that I was active in the congregation, and in the early days of my congregation, when I attended services, having had a bit of a Hebrew background, I was able to do the ushering and being an usher from a theater in the balcony of the Orthodox synagogue where the women sat separately.
Uh-huh.
And I had the opportunity then to help them if they came in late to services, to at least show them in the mouths of the prayer book where the prayer services were being carried on, so we could have a little peace and quiet in the balcony. Which many times I was complimented by the office of the congregation. The president at that time was Max Engelberg, who served the congregation for well over 20 years. During that period, I had the very happy privilege of arranging each of the fundraising picnics we had, where we would go out to the grounds in Wildwood and have a Sunday picnic. Having a bit of a publicity background from the theater days, we would often run a big parade the Thursday before the picnic and over the city, so the people would know we were having a picnic on Sunday, so the crowd would come to the picnic ground so we could raise more money. And very interesting, being a little over anxious at one time, we painted on the corners, or most of the corners in the four or five or ten block area. His footsteps followed the crowd to Dasha Shuren picnic, and the paint was so good it lasted for 3 years.
Oh, heavens, the city like that. So you're exposed.
Also, at the same time, we had the opportunity of running Sunday benefit movies, because if I remember, they may not be those exact years, but during the years there, we used to run a Sunday benefit movie, and Bernie Armstrong was the organist in the city who would always give us services free, and we used to run our Sunday movies out at the old Liberty Theater in East Liberty on Penn Avenue, which is no longer there. In 1929, we were arranging a bazaar, lawn fete, and we were able to go to the Mellon Foundation, and they gave us permission to use a lot behind the large Gulf station at the corner of Penn and Negley, East Liberty. And as we were setting up the stands and things for the 3-day lawn fete, Joseph Porter, who since has passed away, knew us, came by, and drove me home to pick up some material I needed for the evening, and then said to me, "Herman, why don't you join the neighborhood?" I says, "Fine, give me an application." That's when I joined the neighborhood.
In 1929.
Now, before we get into the organizations, I'd like to ask a few questions. While you were setting up business, before we get too far away from it, did the Depression have any great effect on you?
On me as a person?
As a business and as a family.
As a family, we suffered through the same financial situations that all families had suffered through, but I feel deeply satisfied that as a family we grew up together and learned to live together, so each of us contributed what we had to the household for those who remained there, even though each of us were not large wage earners, but we did make our contribution to the livelihood of the family, so the mother was never in want.
And the other thing I would like to ask before we get too far is, did anybody serve in World War I?
Yes. No, not in World War One.
They were too young.
You were too young.
But in
all the brothers.
Well, if you want to get to World War II, were that far already?
No.
Okay, let's hold off. All right, then I gave you the business background.
And we'd like to know a little something.
A little more about the neighborhood.
No,
Pittsburgh
before we
then
get
had...
Before we get into that, I'd like to know a little bit about your daughters and marriage and
well, I'd rather pick them up after
right.
this. Let's do the B'nai B'rith first,
right.
Because at the congregation, I've retained my membership ever since. I've had the privilege of serving twice as president, once for several years, and then came back into the congregation hoping to reactivate some of the younger people and took the presidency once more. I had served the most heavy capacity in the congregation, very active in the needs of the Hebrew school and very active in the needs of the Sunday school.
How big was it at that time?
The congregation at that time was in its present structure, which is still its present structure, and the rabbi was still more Slovene, and during my presidency, I had the very happy privilege of retiring Rabbi Levine. I think he was one of the first retiring rabbis in this community, the sum total of $2,000 a year. Unfortunately for him, he moved to California and lived for many years. It wasn't too easy to sell a congregation and putting up a retirement back in those days, but thank goodness they were able to do it. And then some years later, getting back to the congregation, we also were able to retire our sexton, Reverend Spokane. So even though we did not have established back in those days a pension or retirement fund, the congregation with a limited fund was able to retire them at a limited income.
And did Rabbi Landis follow Rabbi Levine?
No, we had a Rabbi Galinkin that came there. He is now Noah Galinkin. He now is the educational director up in the Arlington, Virginia area.
Okay.
Then Rabbi Landis, Morris Landis, came to our congregation.
Uh-huh. Now let's get on to B'nai B'rith.
Well, in B'nai B'rith back in 1929 had one lodge only, Pittsburgh number 44.
Uh-huh.
Cut that off. This one lodge was a combination of five previous lodges that Pittsburgh had. And I remember one of these previous lodges because when as a kid we lived up in the Hill District, Albert Smith, belonged to B'nai B'rith Lodge because I remember one Sunday evening carrying up an anniversary cake for the lodge meeting. That was my early exposure to B'nai B'rith, but never stuck in my mind until after 29. Now, in 29, we had the one lodge. We had a secretary who had been secretary of lodge for a number of years, and But each of us had an opportunity to become active in the lodge, and I look forward to the day that someday I may become president of the lodge. But up until I got the time to serve as president, I was chairman of most every committee. And I remember quite well that one year we had a membership campaign where we were able to enlist at least an additional 700 members for the one lodge, which then I think had about 300. It became the largest.
In 1929, how many members did
you have? Well, by 1929, I was Sarah Lodge, then I had about 400 members. And we rose to close to 1,000 members during the years when we conducted this membership campaign, and to the point where we were the largest B'nai B'rith lodge in the United States.
I take it then you were a membership chairman.
Yes.
And how many today would you say in 1975 are in the B'nai B'rith here in Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh now has 12 lodges with a membership of about close to 3,000. Having gone through the chairs of the lodge, I then was asked to join the District Lodge of B'nai B'rith. The District Lodge of B'nai B'rith covers four states: Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, and West Virginia. And back in those days, a district covering these four states had a membership of about 20,000 members. The way you entered into the District Lodge, you had to be elected and campaign for third vice president. In the year that some of the leadership of the district thought I should be third vice president was during the war years when we in Pittsburgh had conducted a very active campaign. When I say campaign, I mean a service campaign. We were one of the first lodges to ship 8 or 9 Sifra Torahs overseas for the communities that were extinct or that had been destroyed after the war.
What year was this, Harmon?
Well, this would have to be right after World War II. And we also, here in Pittsburgh, carried on many service programs for the veterans and others. And I remember quite well when the war was over, we put on a program at the Y tied into this membership campaign. And the man who wrote the script was Nathan Katz, a prominent attorney, Nathan M. Katz. The narration was done by, all of us remember, it was done by Jack Marcus, J.H. Marcus. And this program was put on the Y, and why I make mention of it, Jack Marcus, who was doing the narrating, the only place we could find for him to do it from was a small little 2x2 room over off the stage, so his voice wouldn't be carried out over the crowd. And the program we put on was showing refugees coming out of the country. We actually put a backdrop on stage, and we enlisted the services of many of my brothers who dressed up as immigrants and came on stage. And then Henry Monsky, who was the international president of B'nai B'rith, came to Pittsburgh. This really should have been head of the other district.
That's all right.
Came to Pittsburgh to pay tribute to our membership campaign. And I still have a plaque in the office which he presented to me back in, I think it was back in about 48.
Now these are your two Jewish affiliations so far.
I've got to give you one more affiliation of B'nai B'rith that is very important.
Okay.
I want to finish up the district. In the district then, when they decided I should be a candidate for the third vice presidency, and you went up this ladder almost automatically to the presidency, Judge Sammy Weiss, he thought, also should be a candidate, because Judge Weiss then went into Congress and got on an open floor battle with Rankin, Congressman Rankin, who had made some very derogatory remarks against the Jews, and Sammy, always being a fighter, went to work on it. They thought it would be better for Sammy to take that position, that he was an outstanding political leader. And I stepped aside, and Sammy took it, and I was very proud that he did. And then some years later, I reached my presidency of B'nai B'rith, which was 48 to 49. 48 to 49, I also had the happy privilege in 48-49 to be the chairman of the United Jewish Fund, it was then a fund, not Federation campaign, because we had a United Jewish Fund, which was separated from the Federation. And also that year, if you want to pay tribute to the Masonic group, I was master of my Masonic lodge, and I was also district president. That's how I keep things in order.
Masonic Lodge Fraternity.
Fraternity Lodge 705. I chaired this for the 48-49 campaign. I was also master of my lodge and president of the neighborhood district number 3.
You also...
In our present location, 6640 Frankstown Avenue. On, through the years, each of my brothers came and joined the company until we had 8 brothers under one roof. And in those days, each of us learned the hard way that you start from the beginning. So each of us drove a half-ton panel truck and served the trade, as well as doing the production work in the plant.
How many do you employ today, Herman?
About 130 people.
Still in a family-owned business?
Yeah, it will always remain a family-owned business. In the 40s, during World War II, 4 of the brothers entered the service. They were already in our employ. Just about the time of the close of the war, one of the brothers who still was here with us, Jerome Smith, had a son who had a bad case of asthma and had tried most every treatment possible, and then the doctor recommended maybe a change of climate. And he thought he ought to try Phoenix, Arizona. So he took his wife and 2 children, went out to Phoenix, Arizona, not expecting to move yet, and came back and stayed a couple weeks at our house. And then he says to me one day, he says, Herman, we're family men, I'm leaving, we got to build a business. So he went to Phoenix, Arizona, and then started the first industrial business in Phoenix, Arizona. Then as each of the 3 other brothers came back from the service, 2 of them came back to be re-indoctrinated. There was plenty of room in the plant for them, but they felt they wanted to go out west also and join him until it was 4 brothers in Phoenix. Then my oldest brother, Sam, who was in the film industry all these years in the distribution end, never went out there, never changed, but his wife was not well, and she needed a change of climate, so she went out there, and Sam then left the movie industry and joined them to make 5. My second oldest brother, Lou, who was with us, and his wife was not well, she went out there, then he went out, so there were 6 of them wind up in Phoenix, 3 remained here, and my brother Mike left and went to Florida and started an industrial owner business in Florida. That's a whole background that won't take time.
And who remains with you in the business
remained
today?
Remained with me was my brother Saul, my brother Joe, and my brother Saul retired about 5 years ago. My brother Joe is still with me.
Are your son-in-laws in the business?
We'll come to that, and we'll bring in the dollars, all right? Oh. If you want to do it that way. Oh. You want to quit, or it's up to you?
Oh, no, we're going to keep going. If you, Herman, you've had a fabulous life.
Well, we've got the birth. Do you want their education? No, not necessarily. Let's get on to their marriage, okay? Florida married Arthur B. Sonnenklar, S-O-N-N-E-N-K-L-A-R.
Uh-huh.
Hold it. I'm married 25 years this year, so they've been married in 1950, Florida married Arthur Sonnenklar. She'll kill me for this, but I'll say it anyhow. She met Arthur Sonnenklar because after she had graduated high school, we took her for a trip out to the West Coast as a bit of a graduation gift. And there she met Art, whose twin sister is married to Beck's cousin. And that's where their courtship started. So I shared there too, although she was going with a very fine Pittsburgh boy. And they're still the closest of friends today, even though he married someone else. They're very close friends.
And how many children do they have?
They have 3 children. Deborah, the oldest, Linda, second, and Philip.
Okay. Your other daughter?
Joy Rosenthal married Eliezer. Myrna Joy married Eliezer Rosenthal.
You want to spell Eliezer?
E-L-I-E-Z-E-R. Rosenthal. In they're married about, 16, they'd have to be married 18.